Hello, everybody. I'm Derek Harden, and welcome to Monday Night Live. Tonight, I've got Anthony Steers on. Anthony is known as the telephone assassin. And as you can see from behind him, he's got his telephone box there all ready to go. Welcome, Anthony. Thanks for joining us. You were the president of the London Professional Speakers Association for a couple of years. Congratulations on that. And I know you've spoken all over the world. But tell us a bit about you and your background.
Okay, so known as the telephone assassin, I suppose the culprit I can blame for what led me on that journey was my first job when I left school. I was never the sharpest tool in the box, and my dad always said, "You're a good talker. I think you'll do well in sales." So I asked myself, "What's the biggest commission you can earn?" So I asked my dad, "What's the biggest thing you can buy?" And he said, "Well, it's probably houses and properties." So I decided I was going to become an estate agent. And then I found out they gave you a company car as well, and it was brilliant. But I remember I worked my way up. I was there for sort of 4 and a bit years, I think. And by the time I left, I was one of the valuers in the office. And I worked in a town that bordered, so it's a town called Bracknell, and it bordered on a town called Ascot, which is where the Royal Racecourse Ascot is just down the road. And I was valuing a house over there and looking quite young, turning up in my new company car on the in and out drive. And as I was driving in, I could see the Jaguar of the guy who owned the other estate agent who I was up against. He was driving off. And I did the appointment like I always did. I didn't quote quite as high a valuation as everybody else because I was honest. But I was very good at my job. And as I was leaving, a very lovely couple, mature couple, she thanked me for my time. So did he. And then just before he shut the door, he said, "What does that kid know?" And he closed the door, and that was the last thing I heard. And I got back to the office, and my boss sort of said to me, "So when's it coming on the market?" And I said, "I think I've lost this one." And she said, "Well, why? That doesn't usually happen." And I explained what had happened, and she just said to me, "I suggest you prove you're not a kid before you get there next time." To which I said, "How do I do that?" And she said, "Well, that's what you need to figure out." So, my baby face complexion, which I believe serves me well now, was a bit of an issue for me back then. And what I basically realized was that if people had booked appointments for me, I found that if I phoned them up before I met them and had like a 10 or 15 minute chat, then when I did meet them, they'd often start by saying something like, "Oh, you're younger than I expected." And it actually was more of a compliment when I got there, rather than my age being something that they judged me on. So that's kind of how I realized the power of conversations and building relationships, sort of started me off, basically. Jane Matthews, if you ever get to listen to this is all of your fault, basically. And then my last proper job, so this is my last bit of background, proper job, as my dad likes to say it. Many years ago, I used to sell databases to people to target either by phone or by email. And I used to write some telesales scripts for people. And basically, enough of them said, "Would you make the calls for me?" And I started a telemarketing company with a business partner who was full of hot air, shall we say, and swiftly left the business. And so that's how I kind of got into making calls. And I very quickly got locked into retainers for clients. And my accountant asked me a question, and I didn't have a smart answer for it, which is, "How much money do you make out of your waiting list?" And because I didn't have a smart answer, he suggested I taught people to fish rather than fish for themselves rather than selling them the fish. So I phoned my waiting list of clients and said, "Look, my retainers aren't slowing up, but I am going to run a workshop to show people how to do what I do. Would you like to come?" And out of 23 people, I think 21 people said yes. I made more money in a day than I had in the previous month. And then decided this was quite a good move for me. So I started to watch speakers, bumped into a guy called Phil M. Jones, who's now based over in the States. And he introduced me to the Professional Speaking Association, the PSA. And that was about 12 years ago now. And there's a little bit of background how a chatty little kid turned into a bit of a sales expert, and pretty much used the phone to get what I wanted.
Yeah, I think there's a number of issues there. The first one is you were an entrepreneur and you went car washing at a very young age, which is what I did because I wanted to raise money. I'd be curious to know how many
Absolutely.
people went to earn money at 13 or 14 and what jobs they did. Perhaps
Yeah.
we'll cover that.
Well, the car washing I definitely did, but it came just after I tried to have a garage sale. I heard about a garage sale thing, and I basically just opened our garage and started selling my dad's tools. And once he realized what I was up to, he suggested that I use the bucket and sponge. And that's, yeah, so that was, but I was always keen to earn money, that's for sure.
I love the tip about phoning people up before you meet them, actually, because there's more to that than just feeling a bit young. And you know, we were, I think we I always remember that I always felt young till I was 35, and then when I got to 35, I felt old. So you know, you couldn't really win on that one, but I think that's a great tip, softening people up for the sale, having
Yeah,
that.
well, it then doesn't matter what you look like. And I think most of us are pretty much a bit hung up on something about how we look or what people are going to think about us. So it didn't really matter what you look like. It was more about how you came across and sounded on the phone. And I often say when you speak to somebody on the phone, they're never as good looking as you think they are. When you finally look them up. But yeah, I don't know if it's the opposite of a camera adds £10. Sometimes the telephone adds some mystery about who's on the end of the phone and gets people thinking.
I bet it does. I bet it does add some mystery to the whole thing, actually. That's very interesting. Well, on Zoom, of course, we can change our picture, can't we? And we can put that, get rid of all the wrinkles like I do every time before I come on to Zoom.
Well, I was going to say to kind of complete the background stuff, really. I mentioned that obviously that led me to the PSA,
That's the
and I,
Professional Speaking Association
sorry,
for people
Professional
that don't
Speaking
have that.
Association in the UK, and I came in contact with some amazing people, and one of them, Shirley, is on with us now. But I remember talking to both Shirley and to Linda Shaw, and just talking a bit about my background. And basically, it turns out that it's likely that my parents split up when I was about 7 years old, and I had two older sisters. And according to chats with Linda and Shelley, I kind of learned my communication style from women, which is why I'm quite good at listening. And that's the real reason that apparently I'm this telephone assassin. But again, don't tell my sisters, they'll want all the credit, please. Okay. But yeah, I've got a feeling that that learning curve as the estate agent and being a bit hung up about how old I looked and using the sensitivity of having a good conversation with people that I learned from my sisters and asking people more about how they feel about things. Because it's far more interesting to know what you feel about something than what you know about something. And actually using that means that you can create quite strong bonds in conversations with people.
So, in fact, Shelley and Linda were psychologists, so they were sussing you out and giving you a bit of
Yeah.
advice on that. I'm
Absolutely.
surprised you made more money teaching people than you did from actually pitching the business. That does surprise.
Well, that's purely because I used to just charge a day rate. What you typically find is you get a few gung-ho salespeople who pimp themselves out and do it on commission. I used to get asked to do stuff on commission all the time, and I always used to turn around and go, well, hang on a second, so you want me to take all the risk for your business? Right, you don't want to pay me. And I understand that there's an expectation if you're paying a salesperson that you're going to make sales. But the only guarantee I would give somebody is that I would have as many good conversations as I could in the amount of time that they bought, and I would document every single one of them and tee them up for a next action. So there was never really guarantee. So I just used to sell at a day rate, which I then realized is not very scalable. And hence moving on to the one to many, I then started to learn that as a trainer or a speaker, actually, I could help even more people.
Sure.
That's kind
No,
of
I'm not
what led
surprised.
me there. But yeah, knowing Sh I always describe Shelley and Linda are kind of, I don't describe myself as being hugely credible, as in I haven't studied, I haven't got loads of qualifications that vouch for what it is I can do. So when I'm having my imposter syndrome or I need something explaining or a technique that I use that I don't really understand why it works, is I speak to people like Shelley and Linda. And I always say that Linda talks about how you're wired, the neuroscience part of it, And Shelley talks about all of the experiences and values and the things that have shaped you throughout your life. So actually, if you can check in with experts that know what they're doing there, it helps me understand some of my content.
Anthony, what you don't know is that we have a bell for negativity. And as you were selling yourself down there, I'm going to ring the bell. Imposter syndrome. We don't have any of that on the Monday Night Live show. So you've been reprimanded there. Now, tell us, why did you call yourself the telephone assassin? Because that's sounds quite aggressive, really, that does.
It does sound rather aggressive. It was basically a nickname that when I was making calls for clients, one of my clients referred to me. I always said, don't give me a database. Just give me kind of a wish list or a hit list of your dream clients. And one of my clients referred to me as his telephone assassin. And then a second client a few months later used the same phrase. And when I told that client who I was doing a lot of work with, he went, I think we've got the name of your book then, haven't we? And that's kind of how the telephone assassin came around. And then when it came to branding it, the branding all went very pink, basically. And apparently it softens the aggression in the word assassin so that women will like it too. But I remember being told by Mindy Gibbons Klein from the PSA, who is an American, and she told me to be very careful about being the telephone assassin because I can never sell the company. And the use of the word assassin as well is not one that's particularly liked or has a pleasant ring to it.
Oh, wow. Okay. Now, a telephone doesn't get used very much these days. You know, I've got mine here, but I wouldn't even call it a telephone. I'd call it sort of a LinkedIn machine that gets me onto LinkedIn.
Yeah. Well, quite a few years ago, mobiles changed. They realized do you remember when? I can't remember exactly how many years ago it was now, but they realized that the most common use for a telephone throughout the day was people checking the time. Even if they were wearing a watch and a Fitbit, I sometimes wear a watch on one hand and a Fitbit, and I still sometimes tap my phone to check the time. And around that time when they realized that, Apple brought out this thing called an Apple Watch, which also was a telephone as well. But yeah, like you say, Simon, they kind of, Derek, sorry, they've become smartphones. So people think we're smart because we can Google an answer now, can't we?
But you still make money. You still can make a lot of money teaching people how to use the phone properly.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it's almost shocking that when you say that out loud, that that's even feasible. I thought, if anything, I would be helping people with digital marketing or something fancy and online and technical. But nearly everybody is afraid of a conversation with a person or a type of person. And I like to try and help people tackle difficult conversations. And usually one of the most difficult ones in business are the sales conversation. And you're trying to influence and persuade here. So that it's a fine line between bullying somebody and trying to convince them and plead with them, rather than what I like to think I do, which is help people to buy. Yeah. I get classed usually as a sales expert or sales trainer, or occasionally customer service. And personally, I put myself in the latter because I don't really teach people how to sell. I just try and show them how to help their customers to buy. And when you flip it like that and you angle your conversation in that way, most of what I do is my friends think the telephone assassin sounds quite cool, right? And they know I get to travel and I get to go and give talks. So I play it down. When they ask me what I do, I basically say I teach people good manners and advanced common sense. I show them how to be polite enough that people want to talk to you, but also understand the emotional journey that you have to take somebody through before you can realistically expect them to do something as a result of talking to you. Most of us don't listen to complete strangers and just buy on a whim or using features and benefits. We need to build a relationship. So once you can get salespeople to understand that and get them to slow down, I share like a cool structure with people, but it's got golden rules at the beginning and the end. And in the middle is the three phases of the conversation. And they're really simple. The first phase is rapport. You want them to like you enough to keep listening. Okay. Or not decide that they dislike you or think you're in sales and become rude, aggressive or evasive or anything like that. But rapport's the first bit. You want them to like you. In the middle, it's about establishing your credibility. So I talk about sharing success stories and case studies, or let your clients speak for you. because that way you can build trust with people. And once you've established your credibility, you want to create urgency. You want them to do something. So this is where usually I say you need to offer them a test drive. It has that universal understanding of try before you buy. And it's a good way of demonstrating some value, showing your generosity, allowing people to try before they buy. And if you can kind of apply those principles at the beginning of a conversation, that's why you do small talk and you do a catch up. And I'd go, "Oh, Derek, how's so and so getting on? How's your mum recovering? How's this happening?" You do a bit of small talk at the beginning, even with friends. Okay, then you use your credibility. So you try and share stories where you've experienced the thing that they might need help with, and then you try and offer them an easy next step forwards. So,
How do you build rapport on the phone on those cold calls? Because I usually tell people to go away.
there's well, the first thing you have to do at the beginning of a call, before you even get into the rapport bit, but this does help you with that. One of my golden rules is something called PTS. It stands for permission to speak. And it's just when you make an outbound call, some people would say, "Oh, is now a good time?" Or "Have you got a couple of minutes?" or something along those lines. What I do is I just try and wrap it in great customer service and phone with the assumption I've called at a bad time. So if I was phoning Shelley, it would be, "Oh, hey, Shelley, I was just hoping to chat to you for a couple of minutes, but I'm guessing I probably caught you at a bad time. Is there a better time to call you back?" Okay. Because I would rather that she puts me off two or three or four times if it means that in a month's time, when I ask that question, she says, "Actually, yes, go on. I've got 5 minutes. What do you want to talk about?" Because in my mind, sales will always be a numbers game, but it's not really about convincing people to buy or overcoming objections. It's about capitalizing on the conversations people are ready to have. If they're not ready to have the conversation yet and you force it, it's really hard to get them to do what you want. So if you start with that permission to speak thing at the beginning, and you do this as well with scheduled meetings, it stands for pre-frame the time and the schedule. So if we had agreed that we were all going to meet on Zoom like we have today, it would be, "Oh, thanks ever so much for joining. I've blocked out a full hour today, just double checking how long have you all got?" Because if somebody's only got 45 minutes, I want to know at the beginning, not after 43 minutes when they start looking at their watch and I think we're building rapport, but I haven't got to my main point yet, if that makes sense. So yeah, the PTS at the beginning, I think if you do a permission to speak, you don't have any bad calls, because if people wanted to get rid of you, they can, basically. And then the first phase about building rapport is good manners and research. And we're already demonstrating good manners, but the analogy I give is if you're prospecting, it should feel like you're dropping off a pizza menu. Okay. So we all get takeaway menus, or we do in the UK still, takeaway menus put through our letterbox. Okay. But they don't come and knock on your door when they're dropping them off. Could you imagine that if you had a tap at your door and they went, "Domino's, can I take your order?" Right. At your front door, that's pretty rude, right? Now, don't get me wrong. Go out on a Friday and Saturday night and you target the houses blaring music, you'll probably sell some pizzas. Okay. But at 10:30 on a Tuesday morning, most people are going to slam the door in your face. So what I mean by that is, if I was introducing myself to Graham as a podcast host, okay, and he'd given me permission to speak, what I would say is, "Well, as I mentioned, Graham, my name's Anthony Steers. I'm known as the telephone assassin. Don't worry, it's not as aggressive as it sounds. I do a very specialist topic which stops people from hiding behind their emails. And I've spoken on lots of different podcasts, but I'm guessing you're probably not looking at speakers for your podcast at the moment or guests for your podcast." Okay. And I would lead with the co most common objection when prospecting, which is, "You're not looking for this. I'm guessing you're not looking for this right now." Okay. Because that's the most likely thing that's going to happen. And if I put it on the table, I make it safe to talk about. What most people tend to do, particularly if I'm phoning them up and asking about training, that's the thing that I do most of, is most people tend to go, "You're right, Anthony, we're not looking at training right now because we have a program that runs till the end of the year, or because we don't have any budget until this point, or because we're inducting people and we need to, we're doing recruiting and we need to induct before we can train." Okay. So what they tend to do is confirm that you're correct when you're prospecting, that they're not looking now, and then give you an indication of when they might be hungry for your services. So it pretty much allows them to qualify themselves as being worthy of being in your pipeline and then give you a rough idea of when you should probably get back in touch and I might start looking at this. So that analogy of making it feel like you're dropping off a pizza menu rather than knocking on their door and trying to take an order, That is excellent manners, I believe. And combine that with a bit of research as well, and that's how you build rapport. Everybody has the same favorite topic of conversation. It is themselves. Okay. It's the thing we know most about. It's the thing we care most about. Okay. The more you know about me, or the more I know about you, the easier it is for me to get you talking and to flatter you into telling you why I'm impressed by your LinkedIn profile. Okay. It'll prove to you very quickly, if I've done research, that you're not just a name and a number on a list. You've stood out, and I've gone out of my way to reach out to you. It should hopefully feel like a spontaneous call if it's a totally cold outreach.
Yeah,
So there you go, Derek.
yeah,
There's how you build rapport. Good manners and research. Nice and easy.
that's right, and absolutely. And it's only a year ago that Patricia Fripp told me that you always say congratulations on your link on the client's LinkedIn profile. Great job, but it
Absolutely.
does help if you read it first, though, doesn't it? Because we all know people that don't do their research and they wing it, and they lose
Absolutely.
credibility at that point.
And if you and in sales, if you wing it, which you're doing most of the time, as soon as you get caught, you lose all of your credibility.
Absolutely.
And that's the thing, you're better off not bluffing. That's why poker players usually are skint. That's my view.
So you're the ambassador. You're an ambassador for the National Sales Conference in the UK. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh yeah, it's the biggest sales conference in the UK. Happens every October time in Coventry. They've been running it at, but yeah, I've been part of it for. It's been running for many years. It obviously shrunk down during COVID, and they built their growth hub online portal where a lot of their speakers would record webinars and do some interactive stuff on there too. But yeah, it's a fantastic event for sort of sales leaders. And as one of their ambassadors now, I get to recommend and introduce some of my speaker friends onto the circuit with them. But yeah, they it's a re if you get chance, if you're in the UK at that time of year and you're into sales or you've got sales leaders, it's the top event I can tell you in the country to do with sales, without a doubt.
Right. And so closing the sale, how do you close the sale on the telephone?
Closing is a tricky one because obviously you have to make sure somebody is primed to close. So I suppose, and this might be a bit of a wimp's way out, but the way that you close every conversation that you have, whether it's a pitch, whether it's an introduction, whether it's a quarterly check-in call with an existing client, is my final golden rule that sits at the end of every conversation. It's called TFR, and it basically stands for take final responsibility. And it stands for that for taking final responsibility for the next time you're going to speak to somebody. Okay. What most people's issue is in business is what we would call pipeline constipation. It's where everybody goes very quiet after you've emailed them lots of stuff and a big hefty proposal. Most pipeline constipation happens after a proposal. So by a quick show of hands for anybody who does send proposals, okay, quite often we leave those conversations of, oh, yes, Derek, I'll email you the proposal this afternoon. And then you'll say something like, just let me know if there's any questions. Or you'll say something like, let's catch up next week when you've had a chance to have a look at it. Yeah. Or something along those lines. And then usually 3 or 4 weeks pass and they don't return your calls or your emails. You think they've fallen off the face of the earth. That kind of thing happens. Basically, if we were on the phone and I was agreeing to email you a proposal of some description, Derek, I would probably say something along the lines of, okay, Derek, well, I've talked you through everything and I'm going to put this all into an email for you so you have it in writing so you can digest it. But realistically, if I was to get this to you by the end of the day, when do you think you're going to have a chance to have a quick look through it by? Okay. And what I would do is I would ask you to put a time frame to it and then I would hold you accountable. So what most people would tend to say is usually the most common answer is typically by the end of the week. So if you were to say that line, I would say fantastic, in which case I'll leave the ball in your court, like I'm going to do that. If there's any questions in the meantime, let me know. All right. But just in case you don't get a chance to looking through it before Friday, let's pencil in a 15-minute call on Friday afternoon. And that way I can whip through it, make sure one, I haven't missed anything. Two, I've answered all of your questions. And then my favorite phrase, I then say, and basically, I just want to make sure by the end of that conversation, you have all the information you need to decide whether or not you think we're going to be a good fit or not. Okay, so this can also work if that annoying thing happens when somebody tells you they're the decision maker, then they ask you to send a proposal and tell you that they're going to run it past their boss. Okay, so what I usually do is I praise them when they tell me that thing. They go, "Oh, I'm so sorry, I'm going to have to run this past my boss." I go, "Oh, fantastic, I'm so glad you've got somebody to talk this through with." Because they're not expecting that. That's technically an objection. When you praise it, it puts them on the back foot that you think it's a good idea. Because
Brilliant.
then I can say the line of what usually happens when people go back to their team, back to their boss, back to whatever word they've used. What usually happens is they come up with a question or a concern that we haven't even covered yet. And I pause. And the reason I pause there is I'm giving you a chance to jump in and tell me that I'm incorrect here. And hardly anybody ever jumps in. They just agree with the statement. In fact, if they do jump in, they usually jump in with something like, "Have you met my boss? He's bound to have questions." Okay, so it's usually if they do jump in, a sarcastic confirmation of what you've said, but most of the time they're just nodding and agreeing with that statement. So I can then go for an assumptive close, where I can say, "Well, in which case, how far ahead in the diary do we have to book this to get on a call with your boss as well, then?" And that's
Right.
how I would then try and close my follow-up call. But if you want to prevent this pipeline constipation, a TFR. Some of you may have either teenage or grown-up children, and the TFR, you'll have used this phrase before. You might have just changed the effing word in the middle. But if they take final responsibility, then it keeps that momentum kind of moving forwards.
Fantastic. We got one question in the chat box before we wrap up. From Texas, Texas Tim Durkin, do you teach people how to overcome call reluctance?
Yes, so I call it phone phobia. And yes, so usually if you can get them to understand the permission to speak thing, so that they're assuming it's a bad time and they stop feeling like they're barging into people's day, that usually makes people feel much more relaxed about doing these phone calls. And you can use other platforms as well to break the ice. So if you're asking your business development guys and they're young, I always get told young people are scared of the phone. No, they're not. They just don't like our old-fashioned sales tactics of each no being one step closer to your next yes. That sounds like a day full of rejection and horror. But if you can get them to, usually they're very fast, the younger generations are doing research online. When you can teach them how to find good information and how to weave that into a conversation, like I say, flattery works wonders. And once they do the permission to speak and they combine some research, you'll find that they'll actually love having conversations with people, and people will start to thank them for phoning. And that's one of the key things when you build their confidence and you get them doing those things, is ask them to note how many people thank them for phoning them. Because it's usually nearly over two-thirds of people thank a cold caller for phoning. Well, a cold caller that I've trained, usually two-thirds of them get thanked for phoning at the end of the conversation. Once you realize how many people are grateful for your conversation, it makes you want to pick up the phone and do it again.
Sounds a great tactic. Well, once we've closed this, we'll find out if that applies in France and in America and Hawaii. Anthony, that's been fantastic. Thank you so much for that quick trip through phone phobia. Flattery works, so I'll flatter you. That was a great presentation. Thanks so much. How do people get in? Do people who are watching this get in touch with you if they need a bit of help with their teams, with their people on sales and on the telephone?
Google the telephone assassin, you will find me. My number is very easy to find. You can send me inquiries and messages through LinkedIn and on my website. But pick up the phone. If you pick up the phone, I'm not as scary as you think. I don't have a gatekeeper who's going to be horrible to you. And if you leave me a message, if you quote Mr. Arden, then I will consider us friends. And I will promise to phone you back as soon as I can. Unless I'm on the phone or on stage, I will always answer. And yeah, would welcome anybody wanting to get in touch. In fact, connect with me on LinkedIn. If you send me the emoji of a plunger, I will send you a free ebook for my book called Preventing Pipeline Constipation, which goes into a bit more detail about how you can use this in other scenarios throughout the sales or client process.
Fantastic. Can I ask members of Monday Night Live to give Anthony a vote of thanks in the normal Monday Night Live way? Thank you very much. Now, if you're watching this on YouTube or listening to this on the Negotiators podcast or any other channels, Please like it if you've enjoyed it. Please follow me. Please follow my channel and get in touch with Anthony Steers if you need help. Anthony, thanks very much indeed. It's been great to see you, and I hope you'll join us at another time.
I certainly will. Thank you for having me, Derek. And lovely to meet you all as well.